The Capital Investment Committee hearing for March 6 is called to order. Members, we do not have a quorum, and so we'll move straight to the presentation today. We will hear the 2022 Minnesota American Society of Civil Engineers 2022 report card on Minnesota's infrastructure. We will get presentations from several infrastructure representatives from the Minnesota Infrastructure Alliance, a coalition of professional organizations striving to provide and maintain safe and sustainable infrastructure across Minnesota. We'll start with Michelle Stockness, Chair of the Minnesota Infrastructure Alliance. Welcome. Identify yourself and proceed.
Yes. Hi, everybody. I'm Michelle Stockness. Thank you for inviting us to present today. There's a bunch of us that are going to tag team this presentation today, so we're really grateful to have some time with you all to talk about infrastructure. I'm Michelle Stockness. I'm a civil engineer and a vice president of FAR Engineering as a consultant. And today I'm sitting here as the chair for the Minnesota Infrastructure Alliance. I think you all have the slides that we presented or that we submitted earlier, if you can see those. So that's what we'll follow along with today. What we're going to talk about, I'm just going to tell you briefly about the Minnesota Infrastructure Alliance. You've probably never heard of us because we just changed our name, so I'll give you a little more intro on that so you don't feel so lost. Then we're going to have presentations by local government representatives talking about different aspects of infrastructure in their communities. And then we will kind of open it up for questions and discussions with you all. We're going to talk about our asks up front. And I know you have some votes today on the bonding bills and such, so excited about that. But our specific asks are that state funding is sustainable each year and it's a priority in funding. We ask that existing assets are made a priority for funding instead of just new assets, existing assets also. And we ask that the state work directly with local government representatives to identify needs. And as you'll see, infrastructure is kind of segmented up, so we're trying to coordinate across all those groups to deliver kind of one infrastructure message to you all. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. I'll go into really briefly who the Minnesota Infrastructure Alliance is. If you see in your packet, we have the logo splash. So what we're trying to do is get all the major infrastructure organizations in Minnesota to kind of work together a little bit more and have a coordinated message. So there's 17 different professional organizations that represent different aspects of infrastructure in Minnesota, and we're all coordinating together on infrastructure and infrastructure advocacy specifically. We were previously called Minnesota 2050, if you've heard of that, same team. We just made a name switch to the Minnesota Infrastructure Alliance. So that is who we are. What we're trying to do, our vision is that the Minnesota Infrastructure Alliance is a coalition of professional organizations striving to provide and maintain safe and sustainable infrastructure across Minnesota. So that's who we are. And we have three main goals and audiences. We're trying to reach the public and promote public awareness. I think the public probably does use infrastructure every day, but doesn't really have an awareness of what it is and the different aspects of it. We're trying to enhance professional collaboration. There's a lot of us that work in infrastructure in a lot of different groups, and we're trying to coordinate across and discuss our needs a little bit more comprehensively and in one voice. And we're trying to educate and engage policymakers like you all today, so we're really grateful of the opportunity to talk with you all. So that's what we're trying to do and who we're trying to do to talk to. Next, we want to talk about the Minnesota ASCE Infrastructure Report Card. I think most of you have copies there. Infrastructure, there's a lot of different categories of infrastructure. I think we wanted to emphasize that infrastructure is more than roads and bridges. There's a lot of different categories of infrastructure. Dams, transit, energy, drinking water, wastewater, parks. There's a lot of different categories. And if you'll see on the report card, Minnesota is graded as a C. And so if you have kids and your kids come home with a C grade on the report card, you're not feeling too great, right? C by ASCE standards is mediocre and requires attention. So we would love if our infrastructure report card had a higher grade, something higher than a C, a B, or an A would be wonderful. But we think that more advocacy and more discussion on funding and how infrastructure can be supported can help raise the grade of our infrastructure in Minnesota. And you'll see there's just a quick snapshot of the report card in the slides or else in the handout that you have, and it has different grades for different categories of infrastructure. So what we're really trying to do is help everyone become more aware of the different categories of infrastructure and how we can improve that. And a lot of that can be improved with funding. So that is a little bit about Minnesota's Infrastructure Alliance, who we are, what we're trying to do, and the infrastructure categories we represent. So feel free to keep bringing out that report card as different representatives are talking about their categories of their infrastructure needs in their local communities, too. So that's my brief intro. I'm just the opener here, and I'll leave it to the other government representatives to talk next about their needs and local infrastructure in their communities. So Mayor Kleiss, you want to speak next?
Thank you. Next up, we have Mayor Kleiss from St. Cloud. Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Well, thank you, Chairman and members. I'm Dave Kleiss, Mayor of the City of St. Cloud, Minnesota. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. It's been a while since I've been in this room. I've been Mayor of the City of St. Cloud for my 18th year, but was a member of the State Senate last time I think I was in this room, and I recognize some faces around the table that served. In fact, it's one individual was my hometown representative, Representative Erdahl from my hometown, and my current representative, I see his plate, though, but Representative Wolgemont, I'm sure, will be here. So both good friends and good representatives of the area that I grew up. And I love the introduction and talking about, not only infrastructure, but also the public awareness. I think this is the time of year there's the greatest public awareness, and I noticed that myself. Driving on the roads, we get a lot of public awareness. There's a lot of potholes out there. So with the freeze and the thaw, I think people get acclimated and understand transportation is important. It's always been a priority, although in the last probably 5 years, going back a number of years, people would always talk about it, but it usually wouldn't rank in those top three or four priorities. So we survey in our community every few years, and it's always in the number one, number two, right around public safety and infrastructure. So all that infrastructure, and I talk about the roads, the water, the sewer, the needs are pretty significant. And in a little bit of that introduction that was mentioned too, for us, the issue of sustainability, the issue of actually having something that goes out several years and having an understanding, it's challenging with road projects, large water projects, wastewater projects. It's difficult not knowing when those funds are available. We at our level and most local levels will look at a capital improvement plan. Our capital improvement plan or our CIP goes out 5 years. We look at the growth. We have a community that happens to be growing significantly and has for the last 167 years. So we look at our comprehensive plan. We look at where the growth area is, and we look at what we need to do for water, for sewer, for roads. And this time of year, and I'm sure you've heard many times, the challenge, I think, for most folks in the community, especially the business community, is workforce. Trying to get workforce, it used to be so much different years ago when we would try to attract jobs, and now we try to attract people in to take those jobs in our communities. And that's a challenge because we have to build the infrastructure to do that. So when it comes to housing, as a municipality, oftentimes, I talk to developers and builders, and, inflation has hit all of us, and certainly it has, supply chain inflation issues, but no different for municipalities, cities, and counties, because the cost of that infrastructure is pretty significant. We've seen astronomical rises in the cost of when we can get pipes to put in the ground, but when we can do some of that road work, those inflationary costs have gone up significantly. But it becomes a bit of an impairment when we look at some of the growth areas for us to build in the infrastructure that it takes to do the development in housing, whether it's multifamily or single family, all areas. The need is there. I know the need is great statewide, but it's certainly I can speak for the area that I represent. It's a challenge. I was just out in Washington last week, and I know there's a significant amount of federal revenue. And one of the things that we've been a strong advocate for and have utilized and have a tremendous amount of need, and that's the State Revolving Fund, which has been really helpful, especially in a community that has a significant amount of growth in a regional center. Has been, and I know there's a lot of federal dollars, but I know that's consistent and necessary to have a bonding bill, and I can tell you, going way back in my years, always was a strong supporter of bonding bills. You can never understand why people didn't feel, especially back then. And of course, now we look at what interest rates and bond rates are now. Back then, the amount of money and investment we should put into bonding, I think, is something we should look at every year. And it needs to be sustainable. It needs to be something that we can, as counties and cities around the state, can understand. We understand to do the planning that's necessary for us to look at what we need in growth. But we need to have that partnership that we've had for the years with the state, and I know with our federal funds. For a regional center such as St. Cloud, we have a population of 80,000 people, but our daytime population is 180,000 people. So we grow, we more than double in size, and that really is a strain on infrastructure. And that infrastructure can't be covered by property tax. There's no way that you could expect people to pay the property taxes for that large of an influx of people that are coming in to shop, to work, to go to school. For their health care. We rely on the state for that. So my message is, and you've got more you have more experts that are coming in with the actual data, mine is the fact that we need something that's sustainable. We need something that's probably ongoing on a regular basis when it comes to transportation and infrastructure funding so that there's a way for us to plan and continue to do that. And I think, you know, as most communities, with that type of partnership at the state level and through the federal dollars that are out there and the state dollars that we can do, we'll be good stewards of those dollars and good stewards of that growth where those dollars come back, especially come back into the state coffers, which, again, the partnership and collaboration is necessary. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mayor. There. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mayor Kleiss, first of all, I should comment that he is also a member of the Litchfield High School Hall of Fame.
I was going to say that, fellow inductee.
I wasn't going to say that. But just wondering how it impacts cities like yours and others if we skip a biennium with our bonding.
Mayor Kleiss.
Well, I'll just say in the past, Mr. Chair, that we might, you know, every other year is a bonding year. Lately it's been every other biennium is the biennium for bonding. Any comments on that?
Mayor Kleiss.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, it has a significant, devastating effect. I can tell you, even, you know, stepping a bonding cycle, when there's funding that you're, again, there's no guarantee that funding, but when you look at planning for phones, especially on the local match, it's, you know, matches are a challenge for us. So we have to plan well in advance, whether that's going to be, you know, counties, of course, look at the match dollars that they have for a city. Oftentimes we have to look at referendums. So we got to look at when the ballot is going to take place and then look at whether the funding is going to be at the state level. I can tell you in the last few years, it's been extremely difficult because of the inflation and supply chain issues. I can even go back to, in fact, I was just giving this example to my council just a week ago. Where we had a project, a road project, pretty significant reconstruction, both what's in the ground and what's above the ground. And if we would have done it when we first advocated doing it, it would have been about a $2.2 million project. They denied it despite our pushing it because of, for a number of factors. We're doing that project this year for $6.2 million. The inflation that was part of that. In fact, we were going to do it last year, but we had a supply chain issue. We couldn't get some of the infrastructure that's there. And that's also the piece. If we know in advance, you know, I don't know of any community that doesn't have some of those supply chain issues, but not having something that's fairly consistent is very challenging because when it doesn't happen one biennium, if it doesn't happen 1 year, there's no guarantee it's going to happen after that. That's why having something that's done on a regular basis, and I would say annual, is the best way to do it. You know, even when I served here, I always wondered what the reason was for the biannual bonding. And, you know, to me, it's part of infrastructure, and infrastructure should be, it's every year. There are things that change quite drastically, but I think because of the planning purposes, you expect and anticipate that communities will plan. We do. I mean, our CIP... We do our CIP every year for a five-year plan. We do all of our capital in that respect, and we understand what dollars are coming in. We understand what potential dollars are coming in. It helps us plan if it's every year. At least 1 year, we can figure out if there's an alternative to it. But if it's every 2 years or 3 years or if it's missed, I think the costs keep going up. I don't see anything in the future that's going to show that those dollars aren't going to be up. Hopefully, you get a check on inflation, but that's really, for us, it's having something that's sustainable And competitive, there's nothing wrong with the competitive process. We can demonstrate that, and there's nothing wrong with us having the ability to demonstrate what we need in infrastructure, whether that be water, sewer, roads. We can demonstrate that, but allow it to be at least somewhat consistent in the funding amount and let the competition of communities and whatever requirement, whether that's a match or not, allow us to do that locally. But having some consistency would be helpful.
Thank you, Mayor. Representative Erdahl?
That's good.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Next on the agenda, we have Brian Pogozinski from Houston County. Welcome. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Brian Pogozinski. I'm the Houston County Engineer and also the president of the Minnesota County Engineers Association. So for those that are new or may not be aware of who the Minnesota County Engineers Association is, so it's an association of all the county engineers in the state of Minnesota. So there's 87 counties all represented within the Minnesota County Engineers Association, along with some licensed assistants at those counties. We also are an affiliate of the Association of Minnesota Counties, so AMC represents all 87 counties, 447 county commissioners. So I'm here to talk a little bit about the roads and bridges and funding today. So on the county system has a little over 44,000 miles of roadways, so that's 31% of the total miles of roads in the state are on the county system. 41% of the bridges in the state are on the county system. So either county state aid highways or county roads, a little over 8,000 bridges are county bridges. And if you look at local bridges around the state, so if you add in the cities and the townships, 80% of the bridges are on the local system. So it's over 15,000 bridges are local bridges. So a lot of the bridges are really tied up here at the county and the local level. Funding for the counties, we get money from a variety of sources. So we have the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. So the HUTDF has the fuel tax, license tab fees, motor vehicle sales tax, state sales auto parts. That all goes into the HUTDF. Counties get 29% of the 95% on that. There's 5% that's taken off the top. And then local counties also can opt to do a wheelage tax or a local option sales tax. So 75 out of the 87 counties have now enacted one or the other or both of those local option taxes. And then there's also county levy, county GO bonds or GO bonds. There's federal funding sources such as IIJA. And then there's the state money. So it's the state bonding for local bridges, state bonding for local roads, and the state bonding for local wetland replacement that we're primarily here to talk about today. So on the local bridge replacement program, if you go on to the next slide, the number of bridges in poor condition in the state have really gone down over the last decade. There was over 15,000 bridges that were in poor condition back in 2012. Now there's down to a little under 800 bridges as of 2020 in poor condition. So it really shows that overall the funding that's been going to the locals for bridge replacement has been making a difference. It's been a big improvement on the number of bridges in poor condition. The county that I'm from, over 30% of our bridges were in poor condition in 2008. Now we're down to 4% that are in poor condition. End of this year, we're hoping to have that number down to 2%. So with that, it's looking like we're doing really good. Now, the concerning part is that while it's looking like the number of bridges in poor condition have been going down, and they have, we still have some bridges that have been having to be closed from being in poor condition. There was a bridge that collapsed last year when it was under construction for a mill and overlay on that structure. There are still 3,500 bridges in the state that are over 50 years old. There's another 2,500 structures that are over 40 years old. And the reason why that 50-year-old number is a critical number is that bridges were designed to last 50 years. Up until recently, Most bridges out there right now are still designed to last 50 years. So there's almost 6,000 bridges that are 40 years or more old. So these bridges might not be in poor condition right now, but they're getting close to being in poor condition. So one of the bridges that I'm hoping to replace within a couple years on my system just got listed as being in poor condition here just in the last year. It was built in 1974. So once the bridges get into that 50-year-old mark, they really start going down and deteriorating pretty quickly. And we want to get rid of those structures before they get to that point where we need to close them down or post them down to significant weight decreases where they impact the local businesses and the farmers when they can't get their crops across those bridges. So each year the state or the counties, the local agencies submit to MnDOT a list of bridges that they like to replace. So the current list over the next 5 years, local agencies will like to replace 959 bridges totaling $781 million. Out of those, $876 million are county with a $462 million worth of projects. If you look at the need based on, lack of funding to replace that, to make that all happen, what we're looking at is $289 million in local bridge replacement program funds needed to replace those bridges on that cycle. And then there's also the local road improvement program. So local road improvement program are funds that locals compete for competitively. The last solicitation for that was in 2020. There were 425 applicants requesting $344 million for that for those projects. Out of that, 83 projects were funded, totaling $80.5 million. The unfunded portion of that was $263.5 million. And based on what I've heard from the local agencies, there's a lot more needs, a lot more projects out there that are really good projects that they would like to submit for funding in that category as well if money was available. The last solicitation cycle, 43% of the funds went to counties, 26% went to MSA cities, 20% went to small cities, 13% went to townships. So that money was spread across all different agencies. It really got spread all around the state, so it didn't matter if you were a big city, a small city, a county, a township. You had that option to get some money if you had a good project. The transportation funding needs at the local agencies are not getting any better for us. There's been funding gaps. Back in 2012, the TFAC report showed an annual funding gap of $450 million on the county and state highway system, $450 million on the county road system. Looking at our 2022 construction needs numbers shows a gap of $478 million per year, shortfall of funding to do all of our projects that we'd like to get done. So a significant gap on funding there. And then inflation was mentioned earlier today. Inflation is kind of a big thing that's happening to all of us right now. I'm going to do a quick example here and then I'll stop. So if you look at bituminous road resurfacing costs, to do a resurfacing full depth reclamation project, 7 miles of roadway. So essentially you mill off the existing 4 inches of asphalt that's out there, put 4 inches down. Our county state aid allotment this current year has enough money in it to do 7 miles of road resurfacing. That is all the money spent just for road surfacing will get us 7 miles. We have a 200 miles worth of pavement on our system. So at that rate, it would be 29 miles to repave all of our roadways. That's not doing any other improvements for structural capacity to add additional vehicles that weigh more. It's not adding any type of safety improvements, such as shoulder widening, paving shoulders, flattening out four slopes, improving curves or intersections. That is just purely doing some straight line paving. And that also doesn't improve any drainage to help reduce or minimize protect our system from future flood damage. So, money is tight for us right now. We're all doing everything we can to stretch the dollar out as far as we can. But it definitely has an impact on counties right now. So with that, I can either ask questions or introduce you to the next speaker.
Thank you. We have a few questions. Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your presentation. It's pretty sobering. And one thing that struck me is that 50 years isn't as long as it used to be. When you look at useful life, and you're saying a bridge is about 50 years useful life?
Yep, so the newer ones are designed to last 75, 80 to 100 years, depending on if it's a bridge or a box culvert, but the old ones were all designed to last 50.
Okay, and that was the point of my question, is to see if there's new techniques, developments that'll extend the useful life of new construction as well as existing. I come from Plymouth, and we're dealing a lot with these issues. And one of the things the Public Works Director has done was introduce full depth reclamation. Of course, mill and overlay, you really extend the useful life if it's appropriate for that street or road or whatever. But full depth reclamation, you know, is a new advancement. Can you comment?
Yeah, so kind of depending on what the purpose of the roadway is and what you're trying to gain when you do it. A thin mill and overlay, you're going to get a better ride quality, but the cracks are going to reflect through. You're going to get potholes. Everything's going to show up a lot quicker with a thin project. On a rural project with a lower traffic volume, such as what exists on a lot of the local systems, if you mill off 2 inches of pavement, you're leaving 2 inches of pavement left behind. That crack's going to reflect through. If you take all the pavement off, you put new pavement on top, you're actually increasing your base thickness a little bit more, and then you don't have that reflective cracking coming through. So we can get 25 to 30 years life out of a project when we do a full depth reclamation. If you do a mill and overlay, you might pay 70% of the cost, but you're only going to get 10 to 12 years of life.
Representative Carroll.
Chair. And so how about, can you comment about the bridges then? Any new developments, techniques in terms of bridges, either repair or construction?
So bridges are now, like I said before, they're designed to last, you know, 80 years if it's a bridge, if it's a box culvert, maybe 100 years. Box culverts are a quick and easy way to get those installed, so there's a lot more focus on putting in box culverts instead of small bridges. So we do that whenever possible. Right now, with the delay of materials and the inflation, it's making it difficult to put in some box culverts. We may need to be using more of those small bridges. But we're doing, you know, we're really looking at how do we get those bridges to last longer. The old bridges were just standard rebar. Now they're doing epoxy coating rebar on both the top and the bottom of the bottom layers within the concrete. So there's advances. So that way, as you use salt on the bridges, you're not corroding the metal as quickly.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pogosinski. Next up, we have Joe McPherson. Sorry, before you go, we got one more question for you. Representative Scraba, apologize for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pogolinski, I'm trying to get that name right. Back on page 4, traditional county funding sources, the local option sales tax, you said quite a few counties, almost all of them have enacted it in some way. It also is part of the gas tax, too, or is it just all local sales tax?
No, this is just local sales tax. Okay. For that.
Then over on the bridge replacement program, you commented how there was over 1,400, 1,500 in 2012, and now we have 77. Is it safe to say that increase in that half percent helped alleviate that, bring that number down? Because there was more money in the system?
Everything within the system is helping. Now, a lot of the local money that's going on to replacement is going to pavement reclamation, trying to extend the pavement life or keep the right quality of the roadways. I don't believe that there's a whole lot of county bridges or local bridges being paid for out of that. Most of the bridges are still being replaced using the bridge bonding money.
Representative Scraba.
Okay. What I'm trying to find out is, you know, the fuel tax is important. I mean, it's a big chunk of our funding.
Yep.
But the more we go to the e-vehicle, the less fuel tax we're going to have. And how are we going to make that difference up? Have you had any experience or projecting out further how that's going to happen or what's going to happen?
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussion kind of internally within our association trying to figure out, you know, what avenues and what areas can we keep the funding from going down. There's a lot of options. I don't know what that perfect solution is, but we definitely need to make sure that the money doesn't go down as fuel, you know, fuel efficiency increases and, you know, people do drive less.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next up, Joe McPherson from Anoka County. Welcome. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe McPherson. I'm the Anoka County Transportation Division Manager and County Engineer, but today I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Infrastructure Alliance as well as Minnesota County Engineers Association. So the previous presenter did a great job of running through the first half of this presentation. I'm going to pick up here and just explain a few things about what are the current impacts that we're experiencing as local agencies, as counties, and what are these funding mechanisms that are being discussed, because there's a lot of conversations going on right now. There's a lot of needs out there. How do we balance that? How do we look forward? How do we make sure that we put together a plan that works for everybody and is sustainable? So I'm going to start on the slide there that talks about inflation impacts to box culverts, or impacts to counties with concrete box culverts. So as Brian just mentioned, concrete box culverts have become a really valuable tool for local agencies as well as the state as far as replacing bridges. They're fast to construct. They're easy to maintain. However, when you look at what the impacts to inflation are right now and supply shortages, we've seen a 50% uptick in prices on that over the last couple of years. So almost doubled the price of these box culverts, which is a dramatic effect on our program. Next, on the next slide there, taking a look at bridges. So 95% of the bridges that are constructed by counties are either what they call pre-stressed concrete beams, like you see in the image there on the slide, or there's concrete slab span style bridges. So prices on those as well have gone up. There's been concrete shortages recently, and then also just the labor that goes into that. So we've seen a 25% increase on those items as well over the course of the last couple of years. So again, that continues to chip away at our buying power with the funding sources that we have today. So continuing to look at resiliency and looking forward for transportation. Another one on the next slide here, actually directly, this information came from us. So in Anoka County, we have approximately 240 signal systems to maintain traffic and make sure that cars are driving safely on the roadway. As we looked over the course of the last 5 years, you can see that the increase in cost was pretty steady, pretty low. They were the same from year to year. But again, over the course of the last couple of years, we've seen steel prices increase, material supply shortages, and the like. So again, our buying power has continued to be reduced. On the next slide here, looking at our vehicles and equipment, one of those key attributes that a lot of us sometimes take for granted is we have to maintain what we have as well. So when you start looking at the equipment we use to plow our streets, prices on those have skyrocketed. As you can see here, for a tandem axle plow truck, over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, you've seen it uptick from $260,000 to $340,000. That's a lot of money. And so, you know, they're not as pretty as a Lamborghini, but they get the job done, and we depend on them every day. So very important items. One that we actually just personally did an estimate on was our striper truck, and we rely on that to make sure that we have visible lines on the roadways. As we have a aging demographic in some of our areas, it's even more crucial that those lines show up at night and they're visible. That when we bought it 11 years ago, the brand new truck cost us $300,000. As of today, it's over $800,000. So these are real numbers that we're looking at. I'd like to talk now a little bit about some of the funding streams and some of the strategies that are being discussed, and it's all very crucial. The first one is with the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act that was approved. That's a huge win for all transportation professionals. The one thing I want to call out on there is there's, you know, there's a 33% increase from the FAST Act, which is very beneficial. But some of the struggles with that is when you look at our outstate greater Minnesota counties and agencies and even cities, trying to match funds to go after those funds can be difficult. So if you're putting together an application on some of those congressionally grant programs like the Infra Grant, the RAISE Grant, those types of things, some of those cost $30,000 to $40,000 to put together. So just to get the application out there, whether or not you win is a different item. But that's a reality. But just to give you a little glimpse of the type of positive impact that bill has done for us. It's a five-year bill from 2022 to 2026. The total bill is about $4.6 billion. Typically, the cost share on that between MnDOT and the local agencies has been 70% MnDOT, 30% local agencies. So we get a 30% benefit out of that. That equates to about $1.4 billion shared between the local agencies across the state. That's county and city. And then the funds are doled out through competitive programs through our area transportation partnerships, also the like MEC Council here in the metro area. So, but a key thing to also keep in mind is here in the metro area, a lot of those funds, and I know a lot of the areas that you guys represent, a lot of those funds are being used on trunk highway facilities. So local agencies are using a lot of that funds that are even dedicated for locals on the trunk highway system to do local priority projects. So with that need and with the additional influx of transportation funding at the federal level, we need the match. A lot of these smaller communities across the state, they depend on state dollars to help them match these federal funds. Because most programs are a 20% match. Some, like the Highway Safety Improvement Program, are a 10% match. And there's a few that are 0% match. But really, you got to have that match to play ball in that arena. As was mentioned earlier, we had a little discussion about it. The next slide here is the wheelage tax and local option sales tax. You're correct. A majority of the counties across the state have enacted one or both of those items. They're crucial tools. As many of you know, the state aid funds that we've been talking about and you've heard about, those are specific to be spent on CASA or state aid routes. And same on the municipal side, but any non-state aid routes have to be funded with either local property tax or local levy or this transportation tax or local option sales tax. So it's a very important source, but again, we need something that's resilient. It's something that'll move forward in future years and is something that we can depend on from year to year. But that's a good image that shows that how widespread that is across the state. Excuse me. And then transportation funding requests. As I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of interesting and beneficial discussions going on about which transportation funding mechanisms should we implement. How should we implement them? How should we revise them? On here, I just wanted to mention a few. You could increase the motor vehicle sales tax, registration fees, the motor vehicle sales tax, the electric vehicle fees. As was mentioned earlier and the question came up, how are we going to address that? Because right now, based on current projections, there's approximately 45,000 EVs on the road. So as that number continues to grow, that relates to a downtick potentially in the gas tax that's collected. So how do we offset that? Do we increase the fee from $75 to $150 per vehicle? Is it more like a kilowatt hour type thing as they charge? Is there a fee on there similar to like a gas tax? So those types of things are being discussed, and that's great. We appreciate that. We're also very supportive of dedicating 100% of the sales tax on auto parts to our local roadways and the trunk highway system. So 100% dedication to roadways. General fund appropriation to make up for the CASA fund gap that we've experienced over the course of the last year. Bonding for local bridges. Brian did a nice job of running through that. And then our local road program. And then also bonding and base funding for the local road wetland replacement program. Again, that's a very critical program for all of us. Whether we're using state funds, federal funds, or our local funds, we rely on that to offset any mitigation we need to do for wetland impacts when we do a road safety improvement project. The next slide there is really just a quick glimpse of some of the things that have been proposed. You know, you can increase the fuel tax by 5 cents per gallon. And that just runs through some options. I know a lot of options are out there being discussed right now, so I won't run through that entire slide. But the one I did want to spend a little time on is the sale tax for auto repair parts and how important that is to all of us. So currently, based on the current projection, the roadways receive about 45.5% of the revenues generated from that. If 100% of that was put towards roadways, it would have a major positive impact on our roadway systems. This is just a glimpse of one proposal that's out there right now. As you can see, you'd have the 45.5% to the HUTDF, and then a couple options there for small cities and townships and transit, of course, and also the CASA and municipal state aid system. So it's very beneficial. It's very crucial for the longevity of our transportation system. Of course, as Brian mentioned earlier as well, you know, general obligation bonds continuing each year. I know that Representative Erdahl had even made a comment about that, about setting aside bonding each year. What does that do to you as you prepare your capital improvement program? If you don't receive that every year, what kind of impact does that have on your program? How do you plan for that? It is very difficult. Absolutely is very difficult unless you can depend on that each year or every 2 years and you know that there's money there. That's very crucial. But with the general fund appropriation to CASA, that's just helping fill that gap that we experienced over this year. So a lot of details there. Again, the local road wetland replacement program, base funding for that. It's great to see that some of the bonding proposals this year are including that one-time set aside of $12 million. That's excellent. That's going to help support that system. And so one thing I wanted to talk a little bit about here before going to questions was local efforts on the trunk highway system. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of us are, you know, maintaining our system, improving our system as our communities grow. You heard from the mayor from St. Cloud, how they continue to look at their program and they have to expand for the future. They have to meet the needs of their growing communities. We as locals, especially in the metro area, are doing a lot of that as well on the trunk highway system. As MnDOT continues to work on maintaining the system they have and looking at future needs, locals have taken the initiative to actually bite off and challenge ourselves to take on these trunk highway monster projects. So again, we need that funding to help us deliver these projects and look towards that. So the next presenter is going to get into a little bit more about one of those projects that's currently underway and can give you some more details about what type of impacts that has on local communities, how much effort that is, what the needs are, the stress that's involved with that. But at this time, I'd open up to any questions based on on the presentation here so far. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Scraba.
How many EV cars was it again that you estimate on the road?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, 45,000.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
So, you know, other questions. Thank you very much for your presentation. Next up, we have Dan Slunder. Apologize if I did not get your last name right. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and representatives. I am Dan Schlender. I represent the City of Blaine as their city engineer. As my colleague, Mr. McPherson, had alluded to, we do have one of these infrastructure, trunk highway infrastructure projects in the City of Blaine. Several years ago, we started a planning and environmental linkages study with our partners at MnDOT and Anoka County. And that study took Trunk Highway 65 from our neighbor to the south in Spring Lake Park to our neighbor in the north in Ham Lake. It was broke down into three segments. Hopefully you have the handout, which kind of explains some of what I'll be talking about here today. But the entirety of segment two is within the borders of the City of Blaine. That study identified some project needs, and the design that has been brought forward shows several project benefits to that, reducing crashes and improving safety along this corridor. The amount of crashes on that corridor right now is a large stress on our local PD system, on the amount of calls they have, especially here in the last couple of weeks with all the snow we've had. It will reduce not only the travel time on Trunk Highway 65, but would reduce the travel time to our local community to get across this local barrier that we have. And currently there are little to no pedestrian facilities. Walking and biking is not available along this corridor and very limited at some of the intersections. So with the study done and we are in a preliminary design mode for this corridor, we are looking at funding. Hopefully you've all seen this at some level here down at the Capitol, but we are locally running this segment two right now, and it's been very interesting, the process to go through to try to find all the different funding sources that are available out there, not only at the federal level, but also at the state. And today we have been successful in a few of those ventures. At the federal level so far, we've acquired $29 million, and at the state fund, between LPP funds, TED funds, GEO bonds, and some trunk highway funds from a few years ago, we're at a little over $13 million on that. We still have a long ways to go. This is, as you heard, it's a mega project for a city. A $163 million project is one of the larger infrastructure projects the city of Blaine would undertake in quite some time. So I would like to just echo some of what you've heard from my my colleagues here today. I think being new to this process, what's been interesting is just what it actually takes to go through these funding cycles. There was a lot of thought put into how to get this project from design to construction, and what does that mean, right? It needs to wait on the funding, and it is critical. The bonding cycle is every 2 years here, and if you don't or aren't fortunate enough to receive funds in that year, you know you have a two-year wait to do it again. And most projects probably are not successful their first time down here, which means your project is going to be 4 years out. What is, I would say, maybe disappointing from a local perspective is when a bonding bill doesn't get passed. And then you're unsure as to, is there going to be one, or is it going to wait till the next cycle? What does that look like? It makes the project unsure as to what that project schedule can look like. So that unsurety, I think all we would ask as locals is to be consistent somehow. If that's every 2 years, be consistent with that as best as possible. But really, if it could be an every year bonding cycle, that would be even better, because it gives us a consistent stream of funds into these types of projects. With that, I guess I would stand for any questions.
See no questions. Thank you. Thank you. Last of the agenda, we have Russ Mattis from City of Eagan. Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, committee members. My name is Russ Mattis. I'm the Public Works Director for the City of Eagan, and I'm also sitting here today as the Asset Management Committee Chair for the American Public Works Association's Minnesota chapter. So thanks for having all of us this afternoon. So we've heard a lot about infrastructure, a lot about needs for repairs and replacements, probably not a lot of new things for you to some extent, because you probably hear a lot of requests every spring as you're sitting in here taking care of the state's business. You've heard a lot about how much infrastructure there is with roadways and bridges and such. I'm going to talk about storm sewer pipes, which you probably don't hear a lot about, but it's representative of all underground utilities. So as you can see by the heading on the slide, Eagan did an analysis of our infrastructure needs. And so we were looking at, you know, how much is there, what kind of condition are the pipes in, and what's its value. In order for us to understand what we need to do in the future to address any such needs, we had to really understand what we had to start out with. You've heard a lot of good information today. I would tell you that you're hearing from the cream of the crop today. These are some pretty good folks that got some good programs going on. There's a lot of communities that don't necessarily have the staffing, don't have the funding, don't have the opportunities to put the efforts into evaluating our systems, such as what you're hearing today. So infrastructure, I'll go on to the second slide now. Infrastructure is assets. So figuring out what to do with that infrastructure is asset management. That's about as simple of a definition as I can get you. For you kind of see a sliding, I don't know, sliding scale there as far as dark ages to the future is bright. I think most of the folks in this room, I would suggest, are in the proactive, trying to get towards a predictive range. Many of our peers are still in the reactive area, because that's life. It's challenging to have a good understanding of what you have and what its needs are. And so a lot of our peers are still in the reactive wanting to do their best to be proactive, but dealing with reality and just dealing with the issues that they have on a day-to-day basis. So when Egan did this study, it's kind of like, if you think about it, if you're familiar with Egan, we're a fairly young community. We've been around the metro area since early 70s, but most of our growth happened in the 80s and the 90s. And so our infrastructure is still relatively young when it comes to underground pipes and stuff. Recently, we had an analysis that was done. We're the fourth lowest utility rate out of 27 other metro cities that were evaluated. Somewhat of an indicator of the needs aren't as great as the other communities. And so if that is relevant, younger pipes, less needs. But we still recognize that our infrastructure is aging. Our capital improvement plan, like the mayor talked about, the capital improvement plan that St. Paul has, we were starting to spend down our reserves, the money that we had set aside to take care of our infrastructure. The future reserves were going in a downward direction. We also noticed that we had, in particular for storm sewer, that we were looking at increased precipitation events, so increased storm events. In Egan, our 100-year storm, our 1% storm event, went from a 6-inch rain in a 24-hour period to 7.5-inch rain in a 24-hour period. That's a lot. That's a big difference, especially when your system was designed to address that 6-inch rain. It makes a big difference, and so that raises concerns with regards to flooding. So it's not just an issue with regards to how old our pipes are, what conditions they are in, but there's also other factors that are playing into that. When we're receiving more rainfall than what the system was designed, that's a concern, and that's a potential for impacting property owners. And then, as you've heard from some of the other presenters, increase of costs, inflation. That's also putting a more of a demand on what we had set aside for our funding for improvements. So I'm gonna, next slide is goal of study. So we had actually looked out 100 years. So I know that's a long time and it maybe seems unrealistic, but we're able to do that because we know our system. And we saw this huge tidal wave coming 50 to 70 years out. And that tidal wave was just the repairs and replacements based on the standard life cycles of the pipes that we had underground. They were going to need to be replaced in that time frame. And so, you know, the developers, most of the infrastructure in town, and it was a good revelation for me just taking the time to recognize this, but most of the infrastructure that we have in our communities were paid for by developers. Okay, the developers, as they built the Walmarts or as they built the residential developments, part of their construction of those developments was the installation of those pipes. So they were funding that. They were providing the financial wherewithal to put those pipes in the ground. Most cities aren't setting aside an equal amount of money, or you know, one that would grow with inflation, to replace those pipes in the future. That's a big concern as far as for all of us. It should be. Most cities don't have financial plans to address those future needs, as I just indicated. We've got our 5-year CIPs, and for Egan, we were even looking out 20 years. But as I indicated earlier, we were seeing this big tidal wave out there 50 to 80 years out in advance, and we didn't have any plans for that. So that's part of why we did this evaluation. And then it's not just the storm sewer pipes. It's not just the water and the sanitary sewer pipes. But when you're tearing up the ground to get down to those, typically you're underneath a road. And so all of a sudden you're impacting the roadway too. You're also impacting the private utilities, the fiber, the cables, the gas, electricity, things like that. So we need to work with our partners as well for that stuff. Let me see. I'll keep going. I'm going to go to slide 2. It says 2, stormwater and SWQ utility overview. So in Egan, just to let you know what we have got 21 pumping stations, lift stations. That takes the water from a low spot and then lifts it up to a higher spot and lets it run by gravity. Eventually, all the storm water gets down to the Minnesota River in Eagan. We've got 234 miles of storm sewer pipe. That's just storm sewer pipe, not sanitary, not water main. We've got hundreds of ponds, treatment ponds, storage ponds, best management practices for treating water so that Eagan's got a lot of lakes. We're going down to the Minnesota River. We want to make sure the water that's going from our storm sewer system, because all of our lakes and the Minnesota River are all tied into our storm sewer system, we want to make sure that the water going into those community assets aren't impacting those assets. And then we've got maintenance equipment. I talked a little bit about how the 100-year storm or the 1% storm event increased. We've got stormwater requirements. That's what MS4 is referencing. And so we've got these additional regulations and requirements that we also have to address. And you can see that information on the slide. The next slide, stormwater R&R plan part one. Basically we're looking at three different pipes on there. The graph actually indicates a storm sewer pipe would be, I don't remember if it's green or blue, but that's the upper one. That's storm sewer. That's a reinforced concrete pipe. The PVC is what your sanitary sewer pipe is. That would be the middle line that's breaking, heading downwards as you get towards 2070. And then ductile iron pipe is your typical water main pipe in Eagan anyway. You can see the ductile iron pipe, whereas right now we're sitting at about 100% survival probability. As we get to 2070, there's only 20% of our water main pipe that's going to last and do what it's supposed to do. So there's other things that impact that, but I think that's a pretty telling story if you just look at that graph. If we go to the next graph, that shows you a little bit more. So what are we going to do with this information? Well, the map shows the areas of Eagan where we're planning on replacing pipes or repairing pipes. You can see then the bar chart off to the right side. That shows you how many miles of storm sewer pipe that we're going to be either lining, because that's an option. We don't have to tear up and replace all the pipes. There's other improvement options, but something needs to be done. So what's lighter is where we'd be lining pipe, but where you're showing, or where I'm indicating the darker colors on the bar charts as you get to 2050 and beyond, that's a full replacement of the storm sewer pipe. Next slide, stormwater R&R plan part three. As I indicated earlier, it's not just age, it's not just condition of your storm sewer pipe. It's also to protect people from flooding, in particular for storm sewer. And so part of this analysis included, all right, well, let's look at our system had been designed, as I said, for that 6-inch rainfall as a 100-year storm. Well, let's look at it if we get that 7.5-inch rainstorm, which is really what they're saying is a 100-year storm now, or a 1% storm event is my preferred way to express that information. But because most of us have seen 100-year storms, probably 3 or 4 in the last 20 years, right? So that's a big risk factor. And so even if the pipe's going to last 80 years, but it's a risk to the folks that live around that pipe that their homes are going to flood, I can't knowingly leave that in there. You know, so that needs to be replaced. And so that enhances the need to replace that. Next slide. This is just kind of looking at the stormwater R&R plan summary. So this is looking at from 20 to 2070, all the improvements that we need to do. The two quick takeaways, the needs will increase by 50% over the next 20 years for Eagan and how we take care of our stormwater system. And I would tell you we do a very good job of taking care of our system, and we're not doing enough. 50 years out, our needs are going to increase 100%. So we'll have to spend twice as much as we do now, 50 years from now. I will skip down to the Eagan long-term R&R needs analysis case study. So I've been talking about storm sewer. This shows everything. So you can see that combined together, our needs, our costs are increasing significantly. And I'll cut to the chase. And the next slide, if you can go to, says three overall long-term R&R study findings. 95% increase in renewal and replacement. That's what R&R is. in the next 5 years. Okay, next 5 years, we have a 95% increase. Tripling, our needs are going to be tripled by 2040, and by 2027, those needs are going to be five times what they are currently. You can see on the graph off to the right, the darker line on the bottom, that's our revenue that we've got established right now. And it was a pretty good plan. But the line above it, that's quickly jumping up as you get towards 2065 to 2069, that's a lot closer to reality of what the costs are going to be. So that's pretty much it for me. But what I guess the takeaway that I would like to leave with you is we need funding to help communities, our peers, counties, local agencies, to help plan for our future. By what we're trying to do here, we're trying to save our taxpayers' money. We're trying to save our utility ratepayers' money. The better plan we have and the sooner we can start acting, what the council's done with this is they've actually made a financial plan to accommodate what these more realistic needs are going to be. They've started to increase the utility rates today for what it's going to have to be taken care of back in 2050 and 2080 and beyond. You know, that was their choice. We presented the facts to them. That was one of the choices they made. They also started to set aside a rainy day fund, you know, or a capital fund, in essence, to take care of these future improvements. They may not need to spend that money now, but they need to start building that money up for the future. So we need help as a community of local agencies, government agencies, to do planning like this. We need help because it's all of our money, and the better we can appropriate and plan for these future needs, because they're coming, whether we want to admit or not, they're coming, and so we need to start planning for them sooner so we can act proactively rather than reactively. When we run out there and fix a water main break in the middle of the night, that's very expensive. It's very costly to do that. The more we can plan and do projects ahead of time and go out for bids and have it be something that folks that can bid on and do the work for us, that comes in a lot more cost-effective. That's a much more cost-effective way to run our system. So with that, I'll take any questions that you're here.
Thank you, Mr. Mathis. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you so much. As an Eagan resident, appreciate all that you're doing, and thanks from the committee. Thank you to all the testifiers. We appreciate you being here. We have one order of business now that we have a caucus. Lead Erdahl, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 1st?
I move to approve the minutes for March 1st.
Lead Erdahl moves approval of the minutes for March 1st. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes of March 1st are approved. So, members, our next hearing is Wednesday, March 3rd. On the agenda are 16 bills that are drinking and wastewater-related infrastructure bonding requests. Each bill will be allotted 5 minutes and heard on an informational-only basis. Thank you, members. The meeting is adjourned.